All right, we are here, and we are back. Now, we hope that you had a chance to look at your personal obstacles and resistances list. But if not, don't worry. Everything will be good. We will take care of that. But we start now with your questions. So if you have any questions about this topic, feel free to write them in. Daniel will read them to us. And so we can interact and help you understand if we've said something that needs clarification or not, that would be helpful. So, Daniel, are there any questions so far?
As of right now, there aren't any. I guess we didn't give them enough notice. So
Maybe we didn't give you enough notice.
Maybe you have a little something you can say, and then people will start typing them in.
All right. So what we're going to do is we're going to just talk a little bit. And so if you think of any questions, all right, if you think of anything, please type them in. All right, because so far we don't have any. All right. In your personal life, you want to look out. You want to look out in your personal history a little bit about how you came to accept as natural and normal this whole idea of hierarchy, of importance of whoever is at the top and the insignificance whoever is at the bottom, how you in a sense made normal a sense of separation that's not just distinction that distinguishes the one uniqueness here with another uniqueness there, but in a sense creates separation that you are separate and alone energy, you pick it up in your family, in your birth family. Think about it when you were very, very little. Of your, you know, you had your mother was probably there, but you may have had father, you may have had older siblings, other people around, extended family. Who was the most dominant? Who was the most important member of the family? Who was the head of the family? Now, we're saying these because, you know, in your personal experience, you know, if your mother is the one who nurses you, who feeds you, clothes you, et cetera, then of course your mother's going to be the most important person. But when you began to have a sense of the family, and if your father is there, how does your father and mother relate? How does your mother play the good girl, the good girl training that all women get of deferring and orienting their life around the man? Or did you see any of that in action? If you have, if your father was there, you know, did he somehow or another, was he distant? Was he engaged? Did you feel connected to him? Was he fun? Was he an authoritarian? Was he serious? How about your mother? Did she seem frazzled? Was she angry? Was your dad angry? Think about how your parents were, and if you had if you had step-parents, or if you had guardians, or if you had older siblings, what their moods were. Whose mood was the most important? Whose mood did the whole family adjust to? That's the person who was probably the most dominant. It can even be a child. It can be like the oldest child could be the dominant member of the family. So think about your family unit And where did the domination come in? Now, there was a survey given, and 70 of families all around the world, and 70% of these families interviewed said that they practiced physical beating of their child as for discipline and punishment. And when you have corporal punishment as a child, you get really entrenched in the whole experience of domination and your powerlessness, that and punishment subsequently if you do something that annoys the higher up. Okay. 70% approved of corporal punishment. You know, in the Bible, in the Old Testament, there's like it says, spare the rod and spoil the child, which is very, very bad patriarchal advice. Doesn't work that way at all. That's a dominator talking. That's a controller, right? So think about, where did you pick it up? How did you pick it up? Were you physically punished? What did that do to you emotionally? What did that do to your spark of spirited, of independence, of being able to speak out? Were you heard? Were you listened to? Were your desires taken into any kind of consideration in the family, or were you just told to shut up, or basically you were discounted? Look at the relationship that you have within your family, and look out, where did you learn this whole dysfunctional pattern? All right, so that'd be one of the ways that you can, not only there, but just experience, okay, here's this milieu that I was born into, and this is how it was transmitted to me, right? And, all right, so that can be also one way that you can look at and evaluate how you got stuck into the dark masculine, dark feminine. And then you can also look at what were the games and the manipulations that the members of your family played. Because when you're a child, you know when people speak the truth or not, but when they absolutely refuse to acknowledge that they're lying, they're gaslighting you. You know, they're basically saying, well, you're not perceptive of the reality. You know, my reality, this that I'm saying, this is the reality, and even if you don't feel that that's true, it is, and therefore you're wrong. Did you get gaslighted? Right? So think about all of that, and what kind of strategies did you have to do in order to survive and try to be the person that you needed to be so that you would avoid punishment or whatever it was? Look at these dynamics in your birth family, and you'll get a lot of insight into how male chauvinism, patriarchy, and so on made it down, trickled down effect, you might say, into the family. All right. So are there any questions so far?
Yes, there are.
Okay.
So the first one is from Scott, and he says, have we moved beyond astrological and numerological influence as we move into 2021? And are we moving towards more ET contact?
Okay, those are two questions. I'll take the first question. The first one is, are we moving beyond astrological, numerological influence? And we'd have to say the astrology and numerology is not an influence. It's a reflection. But indeed, if you think of it as an influence and you have used it as an influence, yes, you have. You've moved beyond it. As soon as you begin to think in a grander way, after your second Saturn return, there's a certain sense of freedom that comes from your wisdom and your ability to look back on your life and reflect and understand where you've come from and what you still may want to change and shift. So actually, there is no influence in a sense. It's like the planets and the stars are markers. They're reflectors. They're message givers. And as long as you keep them that way, they're still very useful as message givers. Oh, that's what's going on. Oh, that's what they're telling us. Right? Then you can stay connected to the evolutionary path of the collective, because that reflects the evolutionary path of the collective. Now, the astrology is much more precise than the numerology. And the reason being is that in the whole cycle of numbers, which are generally, the numerology is generally tied to the calendar numbers, you know, like January being 1 and December being 12 and so on. So there's a whole bunch of excitement in the spiritual community trying to give meaning to December 12th. 12, yay! And of course, back in 2012, it was 12. Oh, okay. And then, so also in 2020, oh my gosh, it's double numbers. That's really powerful. So there's a whole sense of wanting to attach meaning to those numbers. But the numbers that you have from your birth numerology chart are, again, like astrology, they're like signposts, they're reflectors, they're message. And when they say, oh, well, this is your stressful area, you'll have problems with this, this is where you achieve, and this year is going to be like this, and that's so forth and so like that, you're looking at reflections. And these are very useful when you are not around people of your level of consciousness. We're not saying this in an egotistical way, but realize you're more aware than the average person. And if you don't have people around you at your level of awareness, then the messages that you get are not quite as useful. So numerology and astrology used in that regard as messages, as reflectors, as signposts, as to not to direct you, influence you, or suggest or tell you what to do, but just to show you what's going on, and you are still in your power to choose what you want to do about that. And if you want to activate and utilize that energy in a certain way, you can do something like that. Then that's really good. Okay, but it does not really foretell, and that's why there's just so much going on astrologically right now. This has been a huge past year, has been just enormous, a big year of change, and the energies of it have been reflected from the Capricorn conjunctions to the Aquarian conjunctions, showing the movement from Capricorn, or the top-down dominator. Capricorn is generally the head of family. It's the, you know, it's right, the ruler is Capricorn. And then Aquarius is the community. So you can see that that's the direction it's going. So that's the place where it's just telling you, yes, you're dreaming the new world, you're dreaming a new culture, you're dreaming your own inner culture is new, and that's going to expand, and you're going to help heal the earth and move the earth to that culture and so on. And these astrology and numerology signs are pointing to it. Now, as far as ETs coming in, let's see. Well, this is a free will universe. And by that, it means that your growth path is one of choice. That you consciously choose, and your conscious choices anchored and reinforced in your subconscious mind, into your habits and patterns, and into your unconscious mind, into your perception of collective and world, that is what moves your evolution. Now, a lot of the stories and the mythologies around ETs is that it's all sorts of projections on the ETs by people, assumptions about them. And the first assumptions were, of course, they're aliens. They're terrifying because they're alien. They are alien. If you've ever seen an ET, really seen one in person or something, it is just absolutely terrifying because of the strangeness. There's no rapport. There's no connection link. They have different structure. In their cultures, they have different structures to their emotional body, different structures to their mental body. It's too foreign for you. It's a whole different type of organization. And so the normal connection to a human being is that you see the face and you see the body or you think or whatever, and there's this commonality. But when you see an ET, it's not. It just shakes everything up. So the projections on ETs over the centuries, because they've been seen for quite a while, and also particularly within the past, 50 years or so, as more and more they enter the mythology as different forces. And one of the functions is that they're here to enslave humans and or be their food or to extract stuff from humans that they want. They're here to breed a new race. And therefore, they need eggs and sperm from humans, and they need to cultivate and birth ET babies and hybrids, and use and harvest stuff, harvest eggs and sperm and various things from humans in order to do that. In other words, that they are dominators, and that we humans are fodder for them. And they're using us for their own nefarious controlling and dominating ends. But they're actually not like that. And so those of you who are kind of curious about UFOs and ETs and so on, you're probably much more interested in the group of people into esoterica who want to make contact. There are ETs that are channeling through people and so on. And so this is giving an idea that there's another approach to ETs rather than being scared of them or seeing them as potentially lethal or whatever. So that particular approach is, of course, much more pleasant. But the thing is that the ETs are very careful. They know that they freak humans out. They've realized that, and they do reflect back to you whatever you're feeling. So if you're freaked out, then they become even scarier because your fear hits them and then bounces back magnified to yourself. So they right now, they're just being mirrors. And the main reason is because they're mostly just observing. They would like to talk to humans, but humans have agendas. There's agendas like the government wants their technology, so the military will have the biggest and baddest technology on the planet, and they're not going to give you that technology. They're not going to let you have it. The military always wants it, so they can dominate with it. So E.T. said, no, we're staying out of the way. There's some people who think that the technology gotten from, Roswell crash is being used in the military. Yeah, there is some technology. And actually, some of the UFOs are actually coming out of the future that are actually U.S. military planes, let's say, in the future showing up. That type of space travel is going to be totally normal in the future. You're going to have, you know, spaceships. You'll have anti-gravity. You'll be able to fly faster than the speed of light, but it's the speed of mind. So there's just there's so much that is indeed coming, and that is part of the help that will come with the ETs when the humans are capable of handling it without destroying themselves. So yes, there's going to be ET contact, but not as long as there's going to be extreme domination stuff. The world is gradually moving towards egalitarianism and away from dominationism, and that's a good thing, but not right now. But the ETs will not interfere. They're honoring your free choice to evolve as a human species the way you're going to evolve. They don't want to interfere with that. And also, the human species is on track. If you get your masculine and feminine into balance between light masculine and light feminine, and you're in balance yourself, and you're living in a way that you're not immersed in the domination of industry propaganda, government propaganda, social media propaganda, et cetera, et cetera. If you are able to step outside of that, you have a better chance of connecting with and working with ETs because it will not interfere with the human species free will, and it won't be interfering with your free will either. So you may want to play around with that idea of making contact. All right. Okay, so what else do we have?
So Max says, how would you describe the positive feminine and positive masculine, and what are the characters of a well-balanced person?
All right. As we said before, there's a list of keywords. It's complex. Nobody is simple. And the dark masculine wants everything simple. So the light masculine and the light feminine, there are certain qualities that reflect the masculine dynamic, the doing, the activation, the energy movement. There's that dynamic of the masculine. And then there is the emotion and intuition and sensing of the feminine, right? Now, like we said before, all these words, all these keywords and key concepts are on the GreaterSelfProcess.com site under articles, under an article called From Dark to Light. And what we suggest that you do is that you go to that article and you read, there's going to be the lists for the dark masculine, dark feminine, light masculine, light feminine. And you go read through the words of the dark masculine. And you can breathe them out, let them go, choose to let them go. Then breathe in also then the words of the keywords for the light masculine. Feel them within you, feel them within you, feel them within you. And do the same thing for the feminine, whether you're by gender masculine or feminine, and so that you can kind of get all of those words. Now, once you have those, once you have felt the light masculine in you and owned it, then you feel the light feminine in you and own it, then you say, okay, let me look at my life. How would I live a day of an ordinary day of my life? Like, let's just, by my imagination, let's go back to Friday, last Friday. Okay, how did I live last Friday? What did I do last Friday? Let me go back and live through, in my imagination, live through last Friday and imagine myself in the light masculine all the way through Friday, what would it be like if I were in that light masculine all day? All that energy, all that dynamism, all that spark, that spiritedness, okay? What would it have been like? What would I have done differently? How would I live that day in that dark masculine? I mean, light masculine. And then go through the light feminine and go through your day again and say, okay, how would I my life be different living that day with the light feminine? If I had those qualities, that intuition, that attunement, that sensitivity, what would that, and those feelings, what would my day have been like if I had lived it through the light feminine? And you just you have to put your imagination to use here and go through the whole day from time you get up to the time you go to bed at night, okay? Then, once you do those two, then we would suggest that you then go back. Okay, now, how would I live Friday? I'm going to go back to Friday again. And I'm going to live Friday with both the light masculine and the light feminine. Let's see what that would be like. At first, it may be very confusing. It may feel like too much data to pay attention to, too much orientation. But if you will go back and forth, okay, light masculine, light feminine, okay, let's see, what would that event where I talk to that person, what if I was in the light masculine, in the light feminine, together? What would that feel like? What would, imagine. See, this is really imagination work. You know, if you can imagine, you're just not going to be limited to what realities you create and how much joy and success and happiness you're going to have in your life, you know? So, but it takes some effort to do to integrate those two together and feel yourself as one. But you use your memory to kind of go back and go through, oh, I had a conversation and it was like this and that, and we talked about this and that. Okay, so here I am in the light masculine, and here I'm in the light feminine. Masculine, feminine, masculine, ooh, together. Here I am. And you're going to get when you get it, it's not going to feel integrated. It's going to be a rush, a kind of like, ta-da, that's what it feels like. And then it'll be gone. You'll think, oh, it's like a flash of insight. It's like there it is. But now it's gone. Why? Because it's not integrated in you now. It's outside your box. Okay? So that's what we would suggest, is to do that and do it again. Go later in the day. Okay, that's when I drove and to this place and I picked that up. Okay? Light masculine, light feminine. Light masculine, feminine, feminine. Da, 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 da. So here's where you do your bedtime routine. Maybe you do that, you drink that, you brush your teeth, etc. Light masculine, brushing your teeth. Light feminine, brushing your teeth. Okay. If you get it 3 or 4 times, it's just a sensing. It's something you're going to just get in your body. It's a knowing. It's a perception. It's just like that. It's like your body goes, Oh, that idea. Oh, okay. But since it's not normal for you yet, that's why it goes so fast. So you have to keep reminding yourself. And as you do that more often, if you can do that several times, there will be a point where you can say, well, what do I remember it feeling like when my light masculine and light feminine were together in one, and I was there in the midst of it. I was whole and complete, masculine and feminine. And you'll have a memory, a kind of a memory of that wholeness, a memory of that high level of integration, that oneness, that centeredness, that completeness, a fulfillment of some sort. You'll get it. You'll feel it. And eventually, by memory, choosing to feel it, let's say by choice every day. You start your day. Okay, what does it feel like this day? I choose to be in light masculine and light feminine this day. And here you put them together. Okay, step into it. Feel your power. Feel your freedom. Feel your love. And feel the support and love of your reality here for you. And bam, you are out of the box. Rather, your box has gotten, suddenly went whoop, really huge. So we would recommend trying that, and that would probably help you. There are too many of the words, and we don't want to kind of go over them right now, the key words. That's why we suggest that you do this technique looking at that article. Okay? Thank you.
So before I go to the next question, I want to make certain people understand the website. It is greaterselfprocess.com. All right. So Connie would like us to talk about courage and how it plays with expanding the box. And she says, I'm facing a much expanded, much updated box, and it's taken all my courage to open up to it.
Okay. All right, courage. Courage is the willingness to face your personal obstacles and resistances without succumbing to them. And yes, it takes courage, because at first, when you are in the expanded place, you don't feel safe and familiar. You don't feel part of the collective anymore. And you aren't, really. When you are in that expanded place, you have all sorts of potentials. And at the same time, in a way, it's a greater responsibility that lands on you. And this greater responsibility is to hold to the integrity of this greater expansion. To integrate it, to make it natural and normal. And at first, it may feel like you're alone, that you're separate. So anytime you experience any of these significant concepts or keywords we used for the distorted patriarchal culture that you are born into, like domination, control, manipulation, separation, polarization, competition, winners and losers, authorities, etc., etc. Those are the energies of this dark, it is mostly dark masculine, the patriarchal system. And so for you to expand, then all these limits and all of these structures and all the hierarchy energy no longer applies. So you don't know where you are. You're disoriented. And believe us that when you go to the beyond the collective, beyond the consensus, which you're at the edge of anyway. You've been there for a while because of your conscious awareness and growth. But when you really step off the ledge into open space, it can be quite scary. Courage is your willingness to go there anyway. A lot of the fears, a lot of the programs that you use are listed on this. So when you let go of these, and then you begin to realize this is just BS that you picked up. It's like you have you're your own frequency band radio station. You've got your radio wave station. Now, when you tune into the grander scheme of things, what radio stations are you going to pick up? What are you going to tune to? Are you going to tune to fear-based realities? Are you going to tune to dominators and submissives? You're going to tune to twins acting differently from each other. Weird stuff. There's all sorts of weird stuff. What are you going to tune to? You're going to tune to harmony between people? You see, the media, which kind of controls a lot of the information and input that comes in, makes money off of conflict. It makes money off of separation. It makes money off of shame, because most of these movies are redemption movies. At some point, the character, the main character, has remorse and tries to do something good to redeem himself or herself. And there's all these redemption themes. And Hollywood loves that, because there's all this conflict and suffering, and then the hero's journey, you know, the hero makes it through and so on. So be careful, because there's these scripts. And even when you're feeling free and you're in the open space of the in-between, the old and the new and so on, you're still in the energy of the collective with all those different radio stations. And if you tune to one, you can blow it. If you tune to fear channel, you're just going to blow it. If you tune to angry channel, you'll lose all your power, too. You know, you'll feel powerless as well. So you want to just allow yourself to go into the expansion, own it, and then you'll find yourself shrink back. Don't worry about it. If you hit fear and you shrink back, don't judge yourself about it. That just makes it worse. Basically, when you shrink back, it's like, okay, evaluate. What just happened? I felt fear. I shrank back. When you feel fear, or you feel powerless, your energy field, your bubble, your box shrinks. So you can feel it. It's a contraction. Now, it's not necessarily bad if you realize what's going on and you say, oh, I'm not this. I'm not this contracted person. And you expand back out. You know, it's actually your box can really breathe with you. Expand, contract, like a breath. You expand out, it contracts back. Because the contraction, it's like the waves, they flow and then they ebb. The contraction is not bad in and of itself. That you tune into an erroneous or negative frequency station and feel all distorted or scared or whatever. Nothing wrong with that. It's all feedback. Don't judge it. It's feedback. It's your messages. It's the reflection. Okay, and you can get a lot of this just within yourself. Okay, so instead of, you don't need to have conversations with, you know, real physical people to get your feedback. So you get that feedback. But the point about courage, and getting back to courage, when you become aware that your reality is safe, this changes everything. And we did a love and healing session. It's like working with your reality as a friend. It's a major concept. People just, it's like almost impossible for people to believe because the collective said, basically says your reality's dangerous. You could be under a threat at any moment. People are competing with you. People are after something. They want to get something from you. They want to control you, whatever. So to have courage basically means that you have to choose to believe my reality is safe. Therefore, I'm going to step out into this loving, safe reality, and I'm going to have an adventure. I'm going to be luminous. I'm going to be who I am. I'm going to be me. And you have to remind yourself of that. It also, of course, would help to do the technique that we just recommended earlier about stepping into the light masculine and stepping into the light feminine, putting them together, and finding the cohesion and the oneness that comes with that. That gives you a tremendous amount of confidence and power and courage that you otherwise would not have. Okay, so thank you for that question.
So Carolyn, she has a question regarding when she looks at resistances, the strongest jumps first is the inhibition. So long that she doesn't know how to break out, as well as that she is at a crossroads where she feels she does not know what she wants and who to be. And any enlightenment on this would be greatly appreciated.
Inhibitions. Okay, inhibitions come with that good girl training, where a woman's wildness and her passion is seen as dangerous to the collective. It's dangerous to men. It's dangerous to the society. It's too uncontrollable. So generally, when that shows up early in life, like it did for Carolyn, that the response from the family and the culture is, no, bad, shut it down. And so the pressure and the demand was, okay, restrain yourself. Hold yourself in check. Inhibit your impulses, because your impulses are dangerous. They're outside the norm. They're not okay. Well, the thing is that every human being has impulses. In a patriarchal culture, if boys have impulses, that's okay. Generally, a lot of leeway is given to, go ahead, act crazy, boy. You know? But for girls, girls have to hold the society together, because guys are not responsible and they run around and they do mischief and they cause problems and so on, but they also have control of the money that we need, and therefore you need to support them and be dutiful and obedient and restrain yourself. Don't be too wild. If you get into trouble, you know, it shames your parents, people don't like you, you get excommunicated from your community, blah, 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 on and on and on. Well, this inhibition just basically locks you down and locks down your impulses. Your impulses are part of your passion, which tell you what you want and what you want to experience. So as long as you're inhibited, or that you stay stuck in that box, okay, as your, that's your strategy, is to stay inhibited because it's safe there. You won't get into trouble with anybody there. You want, you know, you're not a danger to society, and therefore you won't be attacked and you won't be shut down. So just stay inhibited on your own. But it also keeps your passion shut down. So, of course, you don't know what you want. But, well, let's start here. You do know what you want, really, if you will put that aside and stop thinking of it in terms of your physicality, of physical actions and what you need to do. What you want is to be free, empowered, loving and loved, and safe. That's what you want. You know, your inner, go to your inner child self and give her love and safety. That's what all children want. They want love and safety, love and safety, love and safety, love and safety. Drench them with love and safety, all your little ones. Okay? Impulses, passion. Go to your adolescent selves, the ones who wanted to break free, the one in puberty that wanted to break free and be wild, run wild, and be free. And let her. Let her run wild. Let her do all those dangerous, crazy stunts. She's not going to get into trouble. You're supporting her now. You're being the safe, loving reality for her. Okay, so that she can run free and wild. Let her run free and wild. Give that to her. Give her her freedom. Give her adventure. That's what the adolescent wants. The adolescent wants freedom very badly. So give that to her. Freedom and adventure. And then go to your young adult selves. Collect a few of those. And give them exploration, play, and all sorts of different kinds of experiences. Just let them have all sorts of different experiences. Let them have a tremendous amount of sex, and you know, your younger self can have all sorts of sex in a meditation and really run off with a really great, cool guy and give her plenty of money and just let her run off and be like rabbits or whatever, or let her go on an adventure through the Amazon jungle or whatever. So give your young adult selves a really beautiful world adventures, all sorts of great things. In the process of doing all this work with your younger selves, all the inhibition will break up, dissolve away, and your impulses will start coming back up to the surface. Your passion will start to reemerge. It may take, 3 or 4 weeks, but heck, after spending decades locked up inside yourself, 3 or 4 weeks is nothing. It's a beautiful opening, and this door of light of in 2021 is offering an amplification of that. And what you'll find is that you'll know what you want. It's not about the form. It's not about what specifically you want to do and where you want to be and with whom you got to be and what you're going to do and what your mission is and what what career you need to hold and what path of activity you need to direct yourself through and what is your destiny track that you need to educate yourself about that. And it's not about all that. That's the BS that got loaded on you by this patriarchal culture. What it is that you want to do first is you want to be free to be you. And there's not going to be much form that's going to be functional, practical, pragmatic, offering itself to you. That's basically catching up on growing up, okay? But once you get a certain sense of freedom, you can start to imagine, okay, what kind of adventures would I like to have? What would I be motivated to do if I had all the money I needed? Everything. If I had everything I needed, I was totally supported, there's nothing external that would inhibit me, and there's no disapproval of what I would do. What would I do? Put together your light masculine and your light feminine, step into the integration of that, and dream it, imagine it. You don't have to physically do it, but just dream it. If you can dream it, if you can imagine it, you can tune into the frequencies of it. Holding the frequencies and orienting yourself to those frequencies, integrating that into your life. In other words, finding a half an hour of joy through something, or just spending time in a blissful imagination, writing something, writing a poem, whatever. Doing something that just brings up your truer self. You'll find that the inhibitions will fade away and you'll begin to think about what you really want. Stop thinking about the money. It's one of the things we had to emphasize in our Magical Money Manifestation series, is that you have to stop thinking about the money when you decide what you want to do. Because if you do something that you think will bring money, it tends to trap you back in the collective. And it doesn't tend to work too well. Your slave driver has to enforce it. And then even though you want to do it, even though you enjoy doing it, then it becomes a task, a drudgery, an obligation, a duty, because it's attached to money. Survival. Competition. So you want to get those vibrations out of your system so that you can find a way probably to have something which you can enjoy and have absolute fun with, and also maybe allow yourself to have money for it. But it won't be. You don't want to do it within the constraints of the cultural milieu, because as soon as you go into the cultural milieu and you belong into the consensus reality, your inhibitions will come back and you'll start motivating yourself incorrectly. We would really recommend that you do our workshop one of the video series, in the video series, Your True Motivation, and that will help you. Okay, thank you.
So this is the last question now, and comes from Christy. Regarding strategies as part of the box, where does this modus operandi evolve to or lift to as we change and grow?
Ah, very good. Very good question. Yes. Yes, because when you expand, you don't want to expand the dark stuff. That's for sure. You don't want to expand the limitations that are there. Basically, what you move into is being real. Because all the strategies were based on inauthenticity, on you trying to be something you are not in order to somehow or another tweak or manipulate your reality to get you something you wanted. So you want to clear all the games and so on, but you want to really understand that when this side is expanded into the light, you become real. You are totally accepting of how you feel, how you respond, what you do, what you say, you're totally fine. You feel safe to respond and in any way that feels appropriate to you, and you will respond with integrity, with love, and light, in your freedom, empowered choice. You will respond from that greater self, from that true adult. And when you respond from that expanded self-image, luminosity, expanded imagination, you will be real and authentic. And you'll enjoy engaging with other people, with your world. You'll enjoy playing with ideas and playing with fun, having with people, with philosophies. You'll just have a blast, and you will be able to be so authentic and so real that your interactions with people, that you can be loving and absolutely true to a T for yourself. Instead of trying to make sure that you say the right thing so nobody gets angry at you and is offended or judges you. It will be just automatically natural. What comes out of your mouth will be true. You'll be true to you. You'll be real. There is a richness, a depth, a meaningful and fulfilling love that comes with that when you're real. And when you're real, you can also honor and accept and embrace more of the divine self. And so your divine self will then be in you, your essence in you, and that self, a greater self, a more divine self, will be doing all the responses. Your awareness of what other people are thinking and feeling, and your awareness of what you're thinking and feeling, you'll be on a, like on a spiritual teacher level, or on a psychologist's beyond level, where you can really be authentic and honest and laugh with a great sense of humor. And you'll find people won't be offended at all. They won't be disturbed by you at all. When you are real and authentic, in a sense, it will actually attract people to you. People want to be around. They love being around a real person, an authentic person, a person who loves being themselves. All right, so that's the light side. And it's nothing to sniff at because, of course, as we say, your spiritual path is you. And when you're real and authentic to your interactions, to your engagements, to your responses, and you are responsible, okay, and accountable and loving, and it's just natural and normal for you, you won't get into hot water with anybody anyway. It's the vibration is a very, it's part of knowing that you're safe too. So you are actually at that frequency level. When you get above the collective, you actually are safe and you can feel that safety. And so you can really be real. It's just so fun. It really is fun. Your life is a blast when you're there. And it's none of this tough, like pulling teeth to process all sorts of deep emotions and all go and dig through, you know, the dark feminine and get rid of all that. There's that self-pity and there's that entitlement over here. You don't have to do so much of that. You're free. You'll be free. It's wonderful. All right. Thank you for that question. And thank you all for your questions. Wonderful, good, wonderful, wonderful questions. All right.